And we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight, got a couple of guests. One of them is a speaker. Another is a young guy who's got about 100 days in the program, from down from Gainesville, Georgia. And I want to introduce Ryan. He's going to come up and introduce our speaker.
All right.
Hey guys, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic addict. It's more like 120 something. Right around 30 days sober, I had gotten the courage to grab How It Works and read in front of the group. And I had never really read before I came into the program. I kind of stumbled over a few words while I was reading it, and the first person to share was Scott over here. And first thing he said is, you know, for all these newcomers out here, if you can't read How It Works, you need to go home and study that big book, and you need to memorize that, and if you can't do it, then you can't read it. And being brand new in the program and had a little bit of a temper, I about jumped down his throat real quick. It took the whole meeting for me to kind of let that go. And then at the end of the meeting, he had to come up and say, so you're going to go home and study that big book tonight, right? And I said, looked at him right in the eyes and said, you know, before you're going to jump down somebody's throat, you want to make sure that they might not be dyslexic and have problems reading, and it might be a fear of theirs to get over something. Yeah. And right away he said, well, God told me that I needed to pick on you. Well, after you hear his story, he does say that a lot. I swore I'd never talk to him again, and then the next day I went to the morning meeting, and he was the first one I saw, and he just kind of looked at me and said, bro, Ryan, we're all right, right? Since then, we've became real dear friends, and I truly do love him like a brother. He means a lot to my sobriety, and now he comes to my halfway house and chairs meetings on Thursday nights for us. Scott Cedarquist.
First and foremost, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Scott Cedarquist, and that's if I'm in the hospital or died, I want you folks to come and pray for me. I want you to know who my name is. I like to say that I'm grateful to you folks and my higher power for another day of sobriety, and I say that just about every day. I say that sure that in the meetings. I got a little time in the program, and I still go every day. My sponsor told me I only had to go to one meeting a week. I didn't know what day that was, so I went every day. I didn't want to miss it. It's posted my sobriety date, but the fact of the matter is, at 4:46 this morning, I rolled out of bed onto my knees and asked God for another day. Said I'd do His will if He'd allow me, and do my best to be honest and kind and loving to others, and He's granted me that every day. I still carry my white chip. This program works if you want it to, and sometimes it works if you don't want to. I just wanted it to stop for a little while. I wanted that pain to go away, and my ass was on fire, and somebody told me you folks had put it out. And it's an honest program. They didn't lie to me. I can't. I was born up north of Grand Rapids, Michigan. Very dysfunctional family. We are all raging alcoholics, and only two of them are alive. I have no uncles, no grandpas. Found out that my dad wasn't my dad after he died. I don't know who my father is. The neat part about that is that I've grown spiritually quite a bit over the years, and come to believe that my father is that big God that has been explained to me as we understood him, if you will. I've grown very spiritually since I came into the program. I didn't believe in God, and I hated you if you did when I came in here, and that helps me to go easy on people when I explain how I got sober, what I did, what have you. Anyway, born and raised, went to Northview High School. drinking was common. Coffee and coffee with booze, and I remember, and there was some passages that got by quickly, but at 7 years old, I was drinking the blackouts. We had a still in the basement, and yes, this is Grand Rapids, Michigan, but I can remember holding that shot glass underneath that copper coil with the coffee can full of ice and watching the drips come out of the and I was such a rotten kid that they let me drink a couple shots. That we called it squirrel juice. Because sooner or later I'd pass out, and they never happy with me. So I've been a blackout drinker. I drank solid for 30 years. I got sober at 37. Trouble in school. If they had ADD back in them days, it would have been me. I don't know that it was Ritalin, but they gave me medicine, and I would pass out in class. Times I didn't get my medicine, they had to tie me to a desk. I pulled a pocket knife out, cut myself free, kicked out of school in second grade. Numerous fights. One of my buddies, Carpet Rick, my home group is Tuesday Night Men's Stag, Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's the oldest group in the area. But everybody's got a nickname because there's so many of us. But Carpet Rick wore this T-shirt, and it says, "I don't play well with others." And I said, "Man, I got to have one of them." That was me. Leroy, you did a fine job. That's good stuff. I was a lot nicer to him than I was to Ryan. I did feel kind of small when he told me. I have feelings. They're not rage and hatred and all that. I have emotions, and I was a tough guy. I was a fighter. I was a brawler. And if you didn't have something I wanted, I'd give a shit about you. I didn't care about you at all. And now I care very much. If no one's told you they love you today, I love each and every one of you. I don't even know you, and I can't say that I like you, but I love myself today. To be able to love myself, I had to learn to love others. That's kind of what this program has become to me. I gave Ryan the riot act, but I mean it. That's what God said to say, and he's one of my dearest friends in Gainesville, and it's pretty cool. And I'm an old man, and I get to hang around with a young man that's got a lot of verbal fire, and it lifts me up on a regular basis. I probably talked to a dozen people here today. I've been here all day. If I fall asleep up here, it's because these idiots took me out and played disc golf all day long, and I haven't thrown a frisbee in 35 years, except for a few tosses with my son and grandson. I was up in Michigan a couple weeks ago, and I thought I was doing pretty well. I could throw it straight for 20 feet, you know. My arms hurt, my back hurts, but my heart's full. My mind is clear. I was sexually abused. I was beaten. I was locked in my room. Just had a terrible childhood. I could go on and on and on. God gave me all those experiences so I could work with the youth after I got sober, and that I could help young people. He gave me every terrible experience that every young person has gone through so that I could, when they said, "But you don't understand," I said, "Yes, I do." And God puts one of those terrible things in my head and says, "Share this story with them, Scott." And it's right every time. Every single time. I do that more through a church than I do through AA. It's non-denominational and a lot of recovery in that church. I used to say that it's a bunch of 40 and 50-year-old hippies helping people out where the churches couldn't. The book does say, be quick to see where religious people are right. Some of those religious people have helped me, but there's only a little bit of what I want, what they have. What you folks got, I want it all. My drug of choice is more. I got AA, I'm high on AA, and I want more. And that's what it's about. By the time I was 13, back to my lovely childhood, I'd been through counselors all through grade school and middle school. And when I got to high school, my mom put me in kindergarten at 4 years old. It was like, get him out of here. But I was just 13 years old in my freshman year, and I went to see the counselor. And first, I was kind of beat up, and they were warned when I came into high school, this kid is tough. He hurts people. He's really, really rough, and you got to watch him close. And this little old lady wanted to know how I got beat up. I heard you were tough. And, you know, I told her, I said, you know, my dad hit my mom again, and I let him have it, you know. Maybe some of you can relate with, you may kick my ass, but I'm going to get my licks in. I never had to say that with anybody else, but my dad was quite a bit bigger than I was, and I wasn't ready to fight a man at 13. And I did get roughed up pretty good. While I was telling her about that and beating my mom and the still and everything else, because I was thinking that maybe if I did all of this, they wouldn't want me in their high school. I shared with what my brother had been doing to me. And, you know, she pulled some strings, and at 13 years old, I became an emancipated minor, and I moved out. And I kind of sort of been on my own since then. A very loving family. One of my buddies' parents took me in. And I'm going to tell you, I love how it works, and I respect how it works. And Leroy, you only missed one word. That was really good. I'm fussy that way. I'm funny that way, man. You know, some of us got our things. But I did. I asked him to do that. Anyway, they had rules. You sit down at the kitchen table, and if you want to stay here, these are the rules. And where I was going with that is I really respect the traditions. I really do. Look at there. I put it up here for time. One of my sponsees calling. It works. It's good stuff. So they explained the rules, you know, no drinking and drugging, and you got to quit your fighting. I broke all those rules, but not there, and not near as bad, and I got through high school. And I'm here to tell you that, my sponsor told me, if you ain't starting getting sober by 7:30, you're going way too long with the drunkalog, and I give a rip about my drunkalog. We all know how to get stoned and drunk and high and crazy. We all know that, or we wouldn't be here. I'm about the steps, but you have to qualify. I earned my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. If it wasn't for wrestling and football and baseball, I'd have never gotten through high school. Those coaches were the best sponsors I ever had, and they went way out of their way. And that family went way out of their way to get me through school. And all them idiots, just like the old-timers in here, all them people that said, you're never going to make it, the old-timers just throw that stuff down my throat when I was new. And just tell me I can't do something, and I'll kill myself to prove you wrong. You know, I'm hard-headed. I are one, you know. It's just that way. I got through school and in and out of jail, ran a pretty successful construction company. Ran into my high school girlfriend 10 years out of school, slept with her once and got her pregnant. And, I married the love of my life. I sent her away early in high school and just said, you need to stay away from me. I'm not good for you. And I loved her that much. And she gave me a wonderful son. And after so many years of marriage, I got sober, and 4 years sober, she was still fussing. And I said, you didn't love me drunk, and you don't love me sober. And we got divorced. And I've never been happier. I've never been happy. We haven't spoken one day in court, but we haven't spoken since. And that was just that season of my life. She gave me a wonderful son. I got three felonious assaults, attempt to do great bodily harm short of murder, and a lot of gunfights. I got three good holes in me, and this arm's full of lead, and I got a lot of knife cuts, and I had over 100 stitches in the back of my head. I was pretty rough, and I was attacked from behind often. But I got a hard head. It's one of those things God gave me. I wish I could touch on something that somebody can relate to. But if you can't relate to any of that, you might be in the wrong room. People had mentioned AA to me, Alcoholics Anonymous to me a few times, and again, I was running, I owned a big construction company. I have a lot of property in Michigan, and I had a lot of stuff. The fact is I had failed at suicide, with my 9-year-old boy in the next room. And it was at that time, and I was on a terrible binge. It was at that time that I had to do something. I couldn't do that to my son. He is the love of my life. You know me for any time at all. He calls me every day to tell me he loves me, and that's where that's at. This my older brother moved down to Florida and had been down there a long time. And if anybody has a cough drop or anything like that, I would appreciate that. I carry one in my pocket. The boys sent me in the stream about 10 times today for the Frisbee. Only once it was mine. But anyway, I go down to Florida and party with my brother. God bless you. Thank you. That's a good one, too. And if it was mine, it'd be all right. Look at this. If it was mine, it'd be all sticky. I'd have to suck it off the paper. It'd be, anyway, year after year, we don't work too much in Michigan when you're in the construction business. So after you get 2-3 feet of snow, it's pretty hard to build. So I find something else to do. But I like to go down to the warm and have fun. And they drink down in Florida pretty good, too. So I've been down there a handful of times and visited with him. And I got a call in 1997, October-ish, maybe, that Randy's in the hospital, he's dying, you probably better come see him. That's my older brother. At this time, everybody in my family's still alive. I'm running this big business and trying to take care of my family and drinking the way I like to drink and living my life. And nobody else has got a job, but Scott has to go down and sit with Randy in the hospital in Tampa Bay. And he was in a coma. He was bleeding out of every pore, had AIDS, hep C, bloated yellow. I'm not such a handsome fella anymore, but my brother's 6'3", 6'4", and just a good-looking man. And I never seen something so putrid in my life. Alcohol is terrible on people. And I drank every night. They would shuttle me from the Hilton down to the hospital, and his buddies would be there at the end of the night and take me out drinking and back to the Hilton. And then back to the hospital. I did this for 3 weeks. The doctors finally came to me and said, "There's nothing more we can do. We need to, you know, we need to take the tubes out and all this business." His insurance was gone. It's the same. He didn't have any more money, you know. And I said, "You know what? Take them tubes out of him and let him die." And they said, "We have to leave the food tube in. That's legal." I said, "Fine. Let him die. Let him die." I was sure he'd die overnight. I was just leaving the hospital, and a little nurse came up to me. She says, "Do you love your brother?" And I thought, where did that come from? This son of a bitch, you know. And I didn't say that, but we had made amends many times drunk. You know, that was a long time ago and all that. And I did. You got to put that stuff behind you, whatever people have done to you. You know, I did not hold that resentment all my life. And when I left home, it stopped. Imagine that. You got something going on in your life that really sucks. You need to get yourself away from it. That's part of the change in playmates and playgrounds. Anyway, she came to me, this little nurse, and said, "Do you love your brother?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I do. Family." At this time, I didn't know some other things, but she said, "If you love your brother, you leave that morphine tube in. Since he ain't moving, and he's this and he's that, but he can still feel pain." There was a second in my mind that I thought, I can get this son of a bitch back. And I thought, no way. I said, "Yeah, that's cool. Leave the morphine tube in." I went out that night, and we kind of celebrated his death. That's what we do when we're drunk, you know. He's going to be gone by morning, and I went out and really hurt myself. And I there again in the morning, and I was waiting for one of the doctors in the hallway to tell me that he was dead. I didn't have to go in there and sit with him again. Nobody said anything. I sat down, and there he was, you know, in the bed, no tubes, no whatever, and I had my head down. I was hurting. This is probably the top three hangovers in my life, and I had some good ones. I learned of the morning drink at an early age, but there was times that it wasn't there. Anyhow, I don't know if it was minutes or hours, I heard some shuffling, and Randy sat up in the bed. He pushed himself up, and these are the words he said. He said, "Jesus Christ, what are you doing here?" And it freaked me out. You know, is this really what's going on? I wasn't real big on the acid and that kind of stuff. I was just really drunk, and I did enough cocaine so that I could drink the way I like to drink. I am an alcoholic. Drugs are a part of my story. I like to share this. I'm a little frugal, okay? I got to be pretty drunk before I spend $100 on that little bit of cocaine. I am an alcoholic. Make no mistake. So, I come to enough to focus on my brother, and I'm trying to tell him what has gone on in the past 3 weeks, and he's not real clear with all of that, but I'm here to tell you, for 5-6 hours, he was back, and we talked, and he talked, and I listened. At one point, he asked me to get him in a wheelchair and get him out to the courtyard, and I thought, well, you're not doing anything for him. I knew he was going to die. I got him out in the courtyard. He says, "Man, give me a cigarette." I can't believe it. I said, "You can't have a cigarette." He said, "What, am I going to effing die, you know?" And we had a smoke, and we went back up, and I got him back in the bed. God, he was just jello, and it was just disgusting. And he really was. He was a lot more man than I am. He was a big, strapping guy. And it was, oh, it was ugly. I'll never forget. And if you see that, and you see that in someone you care about, and you still go out and drink, you got to get some help. He sat there in that bed, and he told me, he said, "Scott," he says, you got to get some help. You got to find God. You got to quit drinking. You got to get away from mom and dad." And he said, "You're the only one that can help the girls. I got two sisters left." And I mean, he was just so serious, so intense. And he died. And I spent a lot of money having him cremated and getting him shipped back to Michigan and all this and that. And I went back and I told my parents a little bit of how it went. And I mentioned to them that I'd spent close to $10,000 on all of this. And they said, "Well, that's your problem. You made a decision to go there." I thought, for God's sakes, he's your son. Anyway, I was mad enough at that point, and you know, when we make amends, it's not about us, it's about them, but I finally decided to tell him. I said, "Do you know why I left home?" "Well, because you couldn't behave here." And I said, "No." I said, "For God's sakes, you have any idea what Randy was doing?" And my dad said, "Well, we kind of wondered about that." And there was never anything done, never anything said. Maybe some of you can relate to this. I wet my bed every night till I was in my 20s. I could not get through a night without wetting my bed. I would get drunk as I could get, and it'd all go away, and I'd pass out and wake up in a pool of piss. And you know, this is a man that's driving $30,000 pickup truck and you know, running crews all over the country. And I was the vice president of the West Michigan Builders Association. I went home from that trip, and that happened with my parents, and I was so messed up and so bad off and so angry, and my wife wanted to leave, and I had a big business meeting, and we had this huge contract, and we were going to build all these houses, and I had 40 acres on the Grand River. That's a big river that runs through Grand Rapids. All this stuff going on, and these people with all the big money, they said, "Well, you know, we want you to do this and this." I said, "It's fine. I've been through all of that. My license, my insurance is good." One fella says, and no, this is back in the 90s. The fella says, "Well, we want you to take a drug test." There was a moment of fear, and I thought, "Ah, it's been a week, a couple weeks." And I went in there and dropped dirty for cocaine. All things. Big shot Scott, you know, Mr. Me. I'm not much, but I'm all I think about. You know, I am a legend in my own mind. And I figured I could beat that drug test. You know, they came up to me and showed me this drug test, and they were just, you know, they don't mind. It's okay to be a drunk, but you can't do any drugs. So they disbarred me, whatever. I'm out. It's over. And blackballed me. That's what I would like to call it. You know, my career is not looking good here. I went home and literally I had to tell my wife, I'm not just a drunk. I'm a drug addict. She wanted to leave, and all of this business had gone away. And my brother died. I'm fighting my fifth drunk driving. And see, I got good lawyers, so it really wasn't a big deal as long as you're getting out of it. I had money. All right? Money will keep you drunk for a long time. Money will keep you sick for a long, long time. It's evil. I spent the last 12 years of my sobriety trying to give it all away, and I've just about accomplished it. That's funny and real, and that's part of my sobriety. So my old lady leaves me, and I'm, oh my God, what am I going to do now? Somehow or other, whether they had a day off school or something, she said, you know, I need to leave Drew. That's my son. I need to leave Drew with you for the day. And I'm in my bedroom jonesing, nobody introduced me to the drip dry, to the jitter joint, to the halfway house, rehab, any of that. I sat in my room for a week and tried to get over all of this crap, and it was miserable and it was bad. But with all of this, my son's in the next room, and watching cartoons, and I decided to put a gun to my head and pull the trigger, and it didn't go off. I'm a hunter. I'm a fisherman. I'm a gunsmith. I've been hunting, shooting guns all my life, and I tell you, out of 20,000 rounds of skeet, I've probably had two misfires. I shoot several deer and rabbits and partridge every year, and God said, no, you ain't chickening out that way. I pulled that trigger. It said click. The pin hit the primer, because I looked at the bullet later. The next thing I heard was Scooby-Doo. My son's in the next room watching cartoons. Can you imagine what a 9-year-old boy would have to open that door and see that blood splattered all over that bedroom? What a chicken shit son of a bitch I am. You know, big tough Scott. There had been one of my guys on one of the jobs that when I showed up after leaving Thursday and showing back up Tuesday and bitching everybody because I had a hangover and telling somebody they weren't doing it right because that made me feel good. This kid would come up to me and say, you know, you don't have to do that anymore if you don't want to. And I'd go, Destry, get away from me. Get out of here. And by lunchtime, when I'm really hungover, really bad, the alcohol's wearing off, he'd say, you know, there's a better way. Well, this happened on and off for a while before all of this happened. I didn't believe in God, and I hated you if you did, and I'll say that a lot of times. But I got on the phone, and I called my foreman, and I said, put Destry on the phone. And he doesn't like to know, he doesn't want anybody to know about his awesome 12-step work, but Destry lives in Michigan, and we're in Georgia. And I said, Destry's up on the roof. I said, get Destry on the phone now. And he came down, and I said, Destry, I just failed to try to blow my head off, and da da da. It was 8:15 in the morning. He says, are you at home? I said, yep. He says, 1020 College, get down there now. And I said, where's that? He said, right down the street from the College Inn. That's where I drank. Imagine that. And he says, there's a 9 o'clock meeting. It was Monday morning. And I went down there, and I walked in there. And when they asked, is anybody here for their first time, I said, yeah. And at the end of the meeting, they gave me this white chip. I've been carrying it ever since. There's no ridges on it. It's very thin. It's very light. It's been in my pocket for a long time. Outside of my sobriety, that's about the only thing I've held on to for all these years. For anybody new in the meeting, you know, there was 50, 60 people in there, and very quickly they shared how it was, what they did, and how it is now. And it wasn't no different than this, black, white, short, tall, fat, skinny, old, young. I mean, they were just all there. And a lot of those people told a piece of my story. I got a little tiny sliver, a little ray of hope. And I was excited, man. If I look over here, I don't feel like I'm talking in the mic, but I'm not excluding everybody. It's all inclusive here. I really, really, really was excited. As bad as I was, and for a moment forgot that I tried to kill myself an hour before that. They hugged me. They told me they'd love me until I learned to love myself. They talked about God, and like a lot of people, I said, well, I ain't going to do all those steps, but there's a couple in there that I can slip in. Maybe that'll help me. They showed me where it said in the how it works, half measures avail us nothing. I did everything balls to the wall, and if I couldn't do it, great. I went on to something else. I had to be the best at what I did. And I don't know that I'm the best AA, but I'm the best AA member I can be. I really believe. They said if I just put 1/10 of the zeal into this program as what I put into my drinking and drugging and fighting, that I'd make it. I'd probably be all right. I'd like to think I put in 15%. I'm very blessed. My sobriety in my mind is very good. I'm very happy with my life today. And I could tell you, God, I wonder if that thing had paper wrapped a second time. Does it have the paper after the... I'm sure it's lasting a long time. I don't care. I put a lot of crazy things in this body. A little paper ain't going to hurt me. Anyway, told me 90 minutes, 90 days. Told me all kinds of stuff to do. And I did everything I could. And just to the best of my ability. I didn't do anything more than I couldn't do. If you have any idea, if you've gotten around an old-timer or even somebody with a little bit of time in the program and they've been blessed and they're excited and they're filled in the spirit, they've worked the steps and they're going on, when you get around that, how can you not want this program? How can you not want to be a part of this after your life has sucked so bad before? And that's what I had. And I became, you know, overly involved with AA. I can remember my wife telling me, you gave up the bar, you just prayed at AA for the bar. And I said, isn't that okay? And I went to 3, 4, and 5 meetings a day. I had to. I was just telling Ryan earlier, I've been all over here, I've been here, I've been on a running since 9 o'clock this morning, but I've been here all day, in and out, and this and that. This is no different than the North Club in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Just all the stuff that's going on and what you got here and the rooms and the people. It's just, you know, I see a lot of faces. I could tell you what your name is in another state. Anyway, that's it. That's the first step. I went in and I showed up. Just walking through the door, it means I'm powerless over alcohol. I admitted it. Just stepping into the, you know, it said Alcoholics Anonymous. I walked in the door. That's it. I fought with the life's unmanageable until I heard all you folks tell me what was going on in your life and what you had to do. And I said, I haven't done that stuff yet, so my life must be unmanageable. Now, there's still some unmanageability in my life today, but it's a whole lot better than it used to be. A whole lot better. I'm going to try. I put my phone up here. Yeah, I'm going to try to run through the steps a little bit with how my first sponsor, Bill Beidler is his name, and there is no finer man in this world. That man took on one tough coin here and shined it up real good. He did amazing things with me. He tricked me into all kinds of stuff. It was phenomenal how he worked me. Oh, God. But went to a lot of meetings. Got dropped off at the club. Of course, you know I didn't have a driver's license. And just went to meetings. I got sober in January, and, you know, in Michigan, we start drinking a little bit before Thanksgiving, and there ain't nothing else to go but shoot deer and drink and right on through. And by January, we're pretty messed up. So there was a lot of us in there, a lot of people come in after the holidays, you know. But there was a lot of people that I got sober in there with, and in 3, 4, 5 weeks, they were doing a little better than I was, and I think they were getting that spiritual thing, and I wasn't. I asked my sponsor, what's up with that? You know, what's going on? And he said, well, you know, I come into meetings and you certainly like to talk. I do. I talk like crazy. I'm a gift of gab. Gift of intestinal fortitude is what they told me. But anyways, I hadn't changed much. I'm still kind of hard. And if you got in my way, I'd threaten you, just knowing that you'd get out of my way. It was a wall. It was a fear, you know. You just keep people away so you don't get to know me, because if you get to know me, you're not going to like me. And right now you're being nice to me, and I don't want that to change. But he explained to me, I didn't want to be crazy. I didn't want that sanity, insanity thing in the step. But he explained to me very simply that it was about doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. If I drink, if I drug, if I fight, whatever, I'm going to jail again. There's trouble, no matter what. Now, I didn't get in trouble every time I drank. But every time I've been in trouble, I've been drinking. It just, it was that clear. There's no getting around it. So there, we just kind of slipped through step two. That was the quick, the Reader's Digest version. I got to stop doing the stuff that I was doing so I don't keep getting the stuff I always got. The third step, that was one of those I was not going to do. That was where I clearly saw God. The power greater than myself, I really didn't think there was one. I still think I'm pretty rough. This is good, too. I have not hit anybody since I got sober. I have not hurt anybody, and I'm really proud of that. I really am. And I don't abuse women anymore, married or not. I have never committed adultery, as far as I know. You know, I know it's funny, but these things are real. I'm excited about this. Some people think that's crazy. It's a big deal for me. You know, I don't know. I don't. I do not. You know, what I do is I get in people's way. I try not to allow other people to do that either. If there wasn't a God, then all this 13-stepping was going on, I'd be kicking some ass. I mean it. I don't like it. You're threatening someone else's sobriety, and it's bullshit. It's wrong. It's got to stop. It's not part of the program. All right? That's my word. One day, and I say this to some people when they really piss me off, I said, you know, one day I may drink again, and you're the first one I'm coming to look for. And I say it real serious. I say it real serious. If I'm going to die, if they're going to shoot me, they'll just shoot me. They'll put 17 cops around me, and I'll shoot, and nobody have to admit they did it. I know I'm going to die easy. That'll be why. For God's sakes, leave each other alone and just get sober. All right? Get sobriety. This is quality of life. Back to the third step. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. I don't believe in God, and I don't want anything to do with it. I've done two steps. I'm pretty happy. I think this is good. You know, I'm probably sober 7 or 8 weeks now. And that's been since I was 7 years old that I've been sober over a month. So I thought I'm good. This is enough. You know, he showed me all kinds of neat things. I'm a nature boy. You talk about the waterfall and the rainbows, and I love to watch the eagles fly. We got a lot of eagles up northern Michigan. If you ever saw a brook trout, it looks like God painted it himself, every one of them. And I've seen all this beauty. And I just think it's just there just because, you know, and it's not. My God did all of that stuff. I didn't think so then, but I know now. My sponsor's got Parkinson's, and he's got some other crazy shit going on. He's really in bad shape. He's just miserable. Many years sober, and takes me on as a sponsee. I'm thinking to myself, you know, this man's got to be crazy. And I was looking into the fourth and fifth step. I thought, well, you know, if that really works, I can tell this guy that stuff because he's going to die anyway. You know, but we were really, really fighting about that third step. And he finally says, do you believe that I believe? Now, I could tell you on and on how bad off this man was. And I know he's listening to me right now. And Shaky Old Bill, that's what we called him. You know, he just couldn't, you know. He says, do you believe I believe? Now, as bad off as that man was and the faith that he had and all the stuff that he did, I said, well, absolutely, there's got to be something going on for you to be. And he jumped out of his wheelchair on his arms. Ah, I gotcha. And that's just how it went. I broke the barrier. There was that sliver again. I believed that he believed. That's the beginning. Now, I am crazy, crazy in love with my God. And I, you know, you might talk about the voices in your head. I spend a lot of time in prayer and meditation, and I hear clearly what I'm supposed to do, and I do it. And it always works out. And some of the stuff that I'm not comfortable with, it hasn't manifested completely in my life. But I'm waiting patiently. So anyway, that was that. He nailed me with that one. And then I got together with my guys and my Tuesday night men's stag group, all the rough boys, you know, and
Scott's going to do his third step tonight. And I'm thinking, like hell I am. don't lay that crap on me. I'm a tough guy. I'm not going into that. And all of these guys get up. They turn the lights off. We're holding hands. We're on our knees. It's a rough group of men. I love these guys. I didn't then. I didn't know I did. On our knees in the dark and said the third step prayer. And I have no idea what they're saying because I didn't know it. But they all said it in unison. It was powerful. It was heavy. It was pretty intense. And the lights went back on and they're all hugging me. And I said, stop that. No, again, I'm a hugging fool now, but I don't want no man hugging me, especially in front of 50 others. But they all hugged me and said, you know, you're there. I know that was a move. It was a movement. It was powerful. But it wasn't quite enough. He's going on and on and on immediately. You know, that action and more action. I don't know the big book verbatim, but I know what it says and I know how it goes. And you got to jump into that fourth step. And he's showing me the columns and all this stuff. And I'm going, man, that's bullshit, Bill. I ain't doing that. You know, that's crazy. He says, Scott, you know, we fought about this for a couple of weeks. They gave me one of them great big pencils that's that big around and a huge pad of paper. And he says, Scott, why don't you just write an autobiography of your life? And I thought, you know, I suppose I can do that. He cut me a little slack. I can do that. And I really, really knew, because I'd been in enough four-step meetings, that it was how important it was to do that. That I probably had to, you know, and I'm just going to slip in and do it just enough to keep me sober. Excuse me. I put it off, and I put it off, and I put it off, and it was probably only days or weeks. But again, I was home. My wife had a real good job, and she also was a CPA for the company, but she was gone. Home again with my little boy. I got a beautiful farmhouse out in the country. I got a trout stream in the backyard and a pond. Big fancy deck that I built on the back. And I'm sitting there in the breakfast nook going, I got to get started. It took me 15 minutes to tell you folks about the first 20 years of my life. I could have wrote that stuff down. I just couldn't do it. But I knew I had to. Anyway, I'm sitting there, and I'm getting a little bit nervous and a little frustrated and whatever. And I'm thinking, maybe I should pray. Let's not go there. I'm sitting in his breakfast nook. My kid's in the next room, that little boy that I love so much. And I heard it again. Scooby-Doo! That's always louder than the rest of the TV. And it hit me. God was saying, yeah, you got to do it. I went out on this deck that I built several years before. And I've built hundreds and hundreds of decks. It's easy money and it's kind of nice. And people always like the deck on the back of the house. No matter how you do it, they're happy. I built this deck. I walked out there and I looked around at beautiful grounds and everything that I've accomplished and all of my stuff. And I started thinking, I know God gave me this. That's what they tell me. Everything I got, God gave me. I kneeled down, put my arms on a railing of that deck. I got on my knees because that's what they're always telling me to do. Get on your tough guys, get on our knees. You know, I got to humble myself. And all of a sudden, it just overwhelmed me. And I said, God, you got to help me. You got to help me write this down. I got to do this or I'm going to die. And I don't want to die. I got just enough sobriety to know this is good. And I want to live. I want to live. You got to help me. I remember just killing me. And I prayed and I prayed. And I got up and I can't tell you if I was out there for 5 minutes or 2 hours. I went in there and I wrote till my hand hurt, my arm hurt. And I put that stupid pencil in my left hand and started writing clearly. And I've never done that before. And I wrote an autobiography of my life. Called my sponsor and this old man who always got to take a nap and everybody's got to pick him up and take him places, and I called him and he answered the phone. He doesn't do that very often. So I'm just excited like a little kid. I got a new fishing pole and you got to take me fishing. You know, let's go right now. And I called him and I said, look, man, I said, I wrote all this crap down and I said, we gotta make an appointment. We gotta do this. And he says, come over right now. And off I went. I went to his apartment. His You know, they had a Catholic monastery, and evidently the Catholics messed up, and it wasn't keeping going, so they ran a bunch of apartments in there, and they let old people come and stay there cheap, and they did that for my sponsor. God loved my sponsor very much, very much. Went over there, he's got these shrines out, and he's got candles burning everywhere. It's really cool, but it wasn't then. I see it in my head now, and it was just really spiritual. And he's reading through this, you know, doing this. I know he's not reading it, because nobody can read like that. Shaking and going on and whatever. And he said, is there anything you want to add to it? And I said, I can't think of anything right now. And he says, okay, we're good. We're good. He says, do you want to do that 6th and 7th step? And I said, huh? He says, do you want to live like that anymore? Do you want to, you know? And we read through real quick. Still all the candles and all going on. It felt really warm in there. It got warmer and warmer. And he said, we got to get on our knees again. And read that 7th step prayer and some other stuff. He's got some other spiritual anointed books that I felt like I was 4 feet off the ground. I felt like, you know, well, how are we going to get down from here? It was huge. It was moving. It was powerful. Now, I don't say character defects very often anymore because my God don't make junk. But that's what it says in the book, and I will not change it. But my shortcomings and my character challenges have diminished. And some of those things that I have in my life that I'm a little rough about, God uses them. Just like picking on Ryan that night. I felt really kind of bad when he told me he was dyslexic. I have a good friend. God knew that. I have a good friend that's dyslexic and had trouble in school with that. And I helped him. And I didn't really give a rip about school, but I cared about him. And so God gave me a very dear friend because I shot my mouth off. I had a little chat with Leroy before the meeting about saying no. God, then he told me he was almost a year sober, and that's so awesome. And I said, you know, go home, pray about it. Everything, man, everything. Pray about it. If God wants you to have it, if God wants you to do it, you will do it, or you will be miserable until you do. That's just how I see it. Prayer has saved my life, and it's saved many other lives. The 8th step was relatively simple. Sponsor went through some of that stuff. We wrote down a few things. He asked me about this and about that. Anything. I remember I didn't write a lot in my 4th step about fighting. He said, is there any more you want to add? I said, Bill, I said, I beat shit out of 500 people, I'm sure. Sometimes 2 and 3 at a time. I have some martial arts experience. And I'm also crazy. You know, I'm willing, you know. It's just, let's go. What do you got? Give me your best shot. Look at this beautiful face. There's not a scar on it. I love to fight, and I'm good at what I do. Again, I don't have to do that anymore. When I told him that I figured I'd beat up that many people, he said, the other thing, I never stuck a needle in my arm. I was never a junkie. I did little drugs here and there, little fun stuff. I was raised in the 60s and the 70s, but just a lot of drinking. And when I get whiskey drunk, I get a little tougher than I don't think straight. He says, I remember you saying you hadn't done that. I said, oh, no, I hate needles, Bill. I said, I want nothing to do with that. We have, and maybe they're all over the place, but we have plasma centers around town. And you go down there, and they suck the blood out of your arm, and they filter it through, and they put something back in you with this cold saline. Needless to say, the gals down at the plasma center are the ones that can't make it in the hospitals. I hope there's nobody here that works at the plasma center, but he made me give blood because I took blood, all right? And I would go down there, nurses are trying to find a vein. I'm going, honey, let me do it, whatever, please. I went down there twice a week for 2.5 years. I said, Bill, they give you $50 a week to do it. I said, Bill, what do I do with the money? He says, you you've got to give that to the club. After I got the $2,000, the club says we can't take any more money. It's $2,000 a year. So the last $500 I had to give to somebody else, made $2,500. Plus bonuses, because I never missed a week. You know what? When you're told to do something, you do it. If you want to stay sober, if you want sober IT, you do what you're told. What's suggested to you? It's like that jumping out of the airplane. I suggest you pull the ripcord. Those are the suggestions. All right? This is what they told me. I know this is good stuff. It's good material. But it's what they shared with me. Nothing I say is original here. So I had some amends. I did some pretty cool amends. I had some neat stuff happen in my life, and God put those people in my life. I didn't go hunt nobody down. I'm here to tell you, that plasma thing, that was a nightmare. I got no driver's license. That was the thing. They took my fifth drunk driving, they took my driver's license away for life. You will never drive in the state of Michigan again. I thought, well, I'll get you on that. Don't tell me. Part of what I missed in between the second and third step is they threw me back in jail. They called me and they said, Mr. Cedarquist, we have some room for you now. And I said, who is this? Kent County Correction Facility. I said, you don't understand. I'm sober now. It's okay. And this gal said, this is just, I had to hunt her down. I had to find her. This cute little gal, because she said, Mr. Cedarquist, if you did the crime, you got to do the time. And I thought that was great. But I'm thinking, no, I'm sober. I'm this and that. Now, after 3 or 4 weeks sober, I called all my foremans. We had a big meeting. And I said, guys, look, I'm sober. I'm going to these meetings on a regular basis. I really don't have time for the company right now. I want to help, but I'm going to take a year off for sobriety. And this, I'm telling my foremans, and they're snickering a little bit. I got four guys here that have been with me for a long time. I said, I want you guys to run the company for me for a year till I get sober. So I was going to give you folks a year. I put you on probation for a year, okay? I'm telling them this, and they're just laughing. I mean, they're wiping tears out of their eyes, laughing at me. I said, what's so damn funny? He said, Scott, we've been running this company for 6 or 8 years now. You know, so the fact that you're going to get sober is great. We kind of like it that you're not there. You know, it hurt me. It just hurt me a little bit. Anyway, and then I went on to do those few steps. And I got to have somebody drive me down. I got to pay somebody to drive me down to the plasma center and drive me back and this and that and whatever. But I did it for 2.5 years. And at 2.5 years, in that very short vicinity time, I got an appointment with the magistrate, and I went down there, and they gave me a restricted driver's license. Now, it said on there, AA meetings, church, because I do a lot of stuff with the church now. AA meetings, church. There was one other thing. It had something to do with anything recovery. And I thought, cool, I can drive anytime I want because that's all I do. That's all I do. And the fact is, after 2.5 years, and I got the restricted license, and my sponsor, I said, how long do I got to do this blood thing? For God's sakes, Bill, this is killing me. I got scars on both arms. I mean, you know, holes in my veins and whatever. He said, that's enough. That's enough. Point I wanted to make before about the 2.5 years. Now I got years of probation, and I had to do community service, and I had to do all this different stuff. Different clubs, different places have a little problem with the people coming in with their papers signed. I am one of those people that had to bring a piece of paper in and have it signed every day. And I want you to know, I respectfully came into the meeting early. Put my slip in the basket. When the meeting was over, I went up and got my slip. I didn't walk in 5 minutes late and throw it on the desk. it's called disrespect, and some clubs don't want to do it anymore because we aren't, you know, we got to get that slip sign because we got in trouble. You got to remember that you played a part in this. I was one of those people, so hear it from me. I did it, okay? I ain't picking on anybody. For 2.5 years, I had one of those slip signs. My probation officer was so proud of me, so excited about all this. She never made me drop. She never made me do anything. She said, anybody that come in here with 50, 60, 70 signatures a month, she said, you ought to be a poster child for AA. Now, I ain't bragging on myself. I went to a lot of meetings. I had nothing else going on in my life, and I liked being in meetings. I liked being with you people. I love being with you people. And so I got my slip signed on a regular basis. But I really do want to emphasize that you turn those slips in and you pick them up and show a little respect, and the groups won't kick you out. And the groups won't point you out. Even if you don't want to do this, if you got one of them pieces of paper, you either come in and get your slip signed, go back to jail. Whatever. That's where it's at. You get that choice. In AA, we get choices, you know. That's what I... So anyway, I didn't have to have a slip signed anymore. Got off probation. Got my driver's license back. Back to the eighth and ninth step. God was putting these people in my life, and I was still threatening people around the club once in a while. When you pissed me off, I told you what I could do if I wanted to. I was a butthead quite often. You know, I still was trying to show that fear, and that's all it was. It was great, huge fear, and I still have some. But my honesty has grown. I don't fear you people. It's when you get out in the missions world. You know, when you step out the door is when it really gets tough. He explained to me that if I could behave myself a little bit, the 10th step really wasn't anything. He lay in bed half exhausted and said, man, I didn't screw anybody over. I didn't threaten anybody today. I didn't hit anybody. I didn't lie to anybody. And, you know, if I did, I talked to my God about it. And, you know, I truly believe this. Let's try a little harder next time. The 10th step was a breeze. I got more and more spiritual with all these meetings. The folks that really had it going on, oh boy, I'm really late, aren't I? Tim should be back there waving at me. I'll hurry. Some of this is important. The other thing is if you got something more important to do, you're welcome to go. No lock on the door. I got to the 11th step, and the spiritual part of the program had really sunken in by now, and sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact, and I excel in that. I love my God. My God gets bigger and bigger and bigger all the time. And there's nothing that I have needed, and my wants are very few anymore. And I really, truly believe. And I still get on my knees every morning. Roll out of bed. I say this. Even if I got to pee really bad. When you get up in the morning, you got to pee. Now, you better pray quick, because the devil's going to get me on the way to the bathroom. I just do it, and it works for Scott. You're welcome to try it if you want to. That prayer and meditation is awesome stuff. If nothing else, you find a little bit of peace in that. In your terrible, crazy world, you get a little bit of peace. You claim it for your own. I practice these principles in all my affairs. I have worked all of the steps. 4 solid times, I've worked a number of 4 steps on different things. But I truly believe that giving back to this program and the men's stag group is very, very into service work, and we go into halfway houses and jitter joints. And I was taking meetings into that jail before they threw me in. And they let me out early. They gave me 90 days and let me out in 28 days. This is God working. The turnkey was one of my... I was a scout leader also. The turnkey was one of my Boy Scouts' father. He was telling me where I could smoke and where I could eat. I mean, that's how God works. I didn't believe in God yet. Anyhow, you get out there, you do the deal, give a little bit back to the program. Be kind even when you don't want to. Sit and listen to somebody when you're telling that crap over and over and over. Because sooner or later you're going to hear what they're really trying to tell you. Stay a little bit late for an AA meeting. I really apologize. I didn't have any idea I was that far over. God had one of my sponsees call, so when I pushed to look for the clock on the phone, it says voicemail on it. So I didn't know it was that late, and my apology. No soul saved after 9 o'clock? Is that, I hate to lose anybody here. Give back a little bit. Give freely of what we found, you know. We talked about the fifth tradition earlier today. And it is. It's all about helping another alcoholic get sober. I was a miserable son of a bitch. I was not a nice guy. And people reached out to me. I'm sure I scared people. But they just knew. They had that no fear. I'm doing this for God, and He'll always protect you. I didn't see anybody with handcuffs. Nobody threw up on themselves. Did anybody wet themselves tonight? We're all sober here, aren't we? This program works. This program works. Now, I like to say, I'm Scott Cedarquist. I'm an alcoholic, and I am grateful to you folks and God. And I always like to end with, and the coffee's real good here. That's what keeps me coming back. I love you. Thanks. God bless. Thanks, Jim. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks everybody for hanging in there. And I tell you what, Lyle Peig of the fourth edition Big Book, the Northwest Airline pilot, he told you right up front when he said, when I drank, when I went to the bar, I said I was going to have a couple and I'd stay all night. So, guys, I'm going to run over. And if you don't like it, get up at 9 o'clock and go. You won't hurt my feelings. But I was the kind of drinker that my sobriety, I go long. And so, thank you, Scott. You did a great job. Really appreciate it. And Brian is going to hand out the chips. They're all laid out right here for you. I'm Brian, and I'm an alcoholic. Here at NAVA on the Monday night speaker meeting, we do the chips like so many other places. The most important chip of all is the white chip. Surrender. That's what this represents. This way of life coming in and giving it up and giving it a try. Putting the drink down and putting the chip up. Is there anybody here that would like and needs a white chip? That's huge. That is absolutely huge. I have others. Anybody else for another white chip? Anybody? After that 30 days of sobriety, we have a silver chip. Anybody with silver? Anybody with 30 days? I have more of those as well. Anybody else with 30 days of sobriety? After that, we have 3 months, red chip, 3 months of sobriety, 90 days. Anybody else? 3 months? 6 months, yellow chip. I was on a roll there. 6 months. 9 months of sobriety, green chip. Anybody else with 9 months? Anybody else? It's a blue chip. This represents a year of sobriety or multiple years of sobriety. Anybody celebrating a birthday? Anybody?
My name is Tinsley. I'm an alcoholic.
And this is 13.
Woo!
was a great story, Scott, and I did not want it to end. It was really great. I look forward to getting to know you.
It's not
going to
happen.
Good. Well, short version, a lot of meetings, sponsorship. The steps, as outlined in the first 164 pages of our big book, seeking a higher power and working with others, and learning to have fun. It's really important we have fun. I'm going to have fun if it kills me. But anyway, I'm going to keep coming back because I love this program. I love y'all very much. Thank you.
Wow. Anybody else for a year? Multiple years. And then we do this again in case you're shy. Anybody in need of a white chip? Congratulate yourself on the chips that you have.
Great job, Brian. And congratulations to all the people picking up chips tonight. And Tinsley, 13 years, brother. That was just fantastic. And we totally appreciate everything you do and what you do here for us. And if you haven't made an acoustical coffee house, we do these about every 2.5-3 months, and we got one coming up this summer. So Tinsley's a man, and guarantee you, sobriety can be fun. Let's see, on announcements, Brian, who handed out the chips, he's going to be telling his story this week on Thursday at Triangle, 8 o'clock. Okay. Brian told his story last January, and wow. So if you are free on Thursday, you have our permission to go hear Brian at a different club. But if you do, it's time well spent, for sure. Okay, any other announcements? Next week, we've got Mike Dunn telling his story. He's also a big part here at the speaker meeting, so we're really looking forward to that. He's got a couple of years, or coming up on a couple of years, sponsee of Tinsley. And so he's the guy that you see if you got papers. And he's got about 3 sponsees now doing the deal, for sure. Okay, well, we've gone as late as we can. If there are no further announcements, I remind you that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. That reminds us to place principles before personalities. And for those who will, please join hands in the Lord's Prayer.
Hey, Brad E., I'm going to pick on you, buddy. Good to see you. Take us out of here, will you?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. And thy kingdom, the power, and glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Just another homesick child. Have some mercy tonight. I can't make it through this fight all alone. But oh Lord, don't make it easy. Keep me working till I work it on out. But please, please, won't you shine enough light on me till I'm free from the shadow of doubt. Keep me out of the shadow of doubt.
As I try to make some sense of this world I'm up against, well, I know my best defense is your love. When the struggle gets insane and the lessons fall apart, keep me calling out your name with love. But oh Lord, don't make it easy. Keep me working till I work it on out. But please, please, won't you shine enough light on me till I'm free from the shadow of doubt? Keep me out of the shadow of doubt. From the bottom of my heart, and I'm searching for one star to shine. I will shout from mountain high, and I'll reach into the sky, till you open up my eyes so blind. But oh Lord, don't make it easy. Keep me working till I work it on out. But please, please, won't you shine enough light on me till I'm free from the shadow of doubt? Keep me out of the shadow of doubt.